It's time for 41 is the Mic, a weekly Chiefs podcast with Nick Jacobs of KSHB 41 and Matt Derrick of Chiefs Digest. 41 is the Mic starts now.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of 41 is the Mic. I am Matt Derrick alongside NFL trade enthusiast Nick Jacobs. Nick, we have actual transactions to talk about this week.
Yeah, I know. I mean, we can finally put the Legarius Sneed thing to a conclusion. Although people don't like the conclusion, we'll be able to put it to a conclusion. And then we're going to talk some wide receivers in the draft. Finally, I watched a bunch of them, Matt.
You're ahead of me. I'm as everybody can probably tell, I'm a little under the weather, so I've been pokey this weekend. So I definitely need to catch up with you because that's obviously
on the under the weather part or the draft wide receiver part.
Definitely need to catch up on the wide receivers. I'm fine falling behind on the under the weather part. I'd be fine not being on that list, but.
You and me both, buddy.
The Legarius Sneed trade and contract that he's gonna get in Tennessee. It's been very divisive with Chiefs fans, and I get it. But I have to say, I'm not really surprised at all, Nick. I mean, we've been talking about it since, you know, really going back to after the Super Bowl and what this team was going to be going through and what the likelihood of compensation back for Legarius was going to be. And at one time, I think that there was reasonable optimism that if the Chiefs could get a couple of teams involved in as far as some pressure and as far as some demand for their supply of Legarius Sneed, that maybe they could get a second. Maybe they could get a plus pick. But third round and they swap sevenths, certainly not what everybody hoped that the Chiefs would get, but pretty much what was there, because it didn't seem like that there was a whole lot of demand for the Legarius Sneed supply.
Yeah, part of it, I'm going to go threefold here, and I'm going to talk for a long time, and I apologize in advance for the person in the comment section that said I talk too much. I'll try my best to skim it down. In terms of Legarius Sneed, when you're going to have to give a player that big of a contract, like that's gonna reduce part of that price. So that's why a first round, you're not getting a first round outright. Selfishly, initially when it started, I was hoping, hey, could they swap up into the teens with it? Is there a team that would be willing to swap up into the teens with it? And if they're not, then, you know, nobody lost, but the Chiefs got in a favorable position to get a wide receiver or offensive tackle from it. So I don't know if that scenario was or wasn't discussed, but then it looked like the Chiefs were okay with trying to get a second, because if you get a second, either, you know, especially in this draft with how much talent's there in the second round, that could do wonders for the Chiefs, or it gave them ammo to be able to trade up to a certain level. What a lot of people aren't realizing is this third round pick that the Chiefs are getting actually probably, depending on what value of they're using trade value wise, this third round pick, even though it's next year, actually helps them potentially at minimum get to 22. They're going to have to add something else if they want to get to 15 or 17 range, but that third round pick helped them get to 22. So the fact that they got the third round pick and were willing to accept that, I don't think that's by accident. I think that's there if they need to move up for a specific player. If not, they have it and they can use it either for another player down the road, whether it's in a trade or use it in a potential trade next year. But it gives the Chiefs flexibility on multiple levels to where I don't think they're keeping that third round pick long term from 2025. I think it'll be used for somebody, whether it's this year or next year. That piece of the puzzle, I don't think you can judge right now. And then the swap of, you know, getting up to 221. I mean, look, it's not for a lot of fans that may not be that big of a deal, but with what they probably are looking at on their draft board tier wise right now, there's probably a pocket up there. They're like, man, if we're in this position, we could probably get one of these guys and we control them for 4 years and we don't have to worry about the bonus that we're potentially going to pay as an undrafted guy. And we don't have to take a flyer as an undrafted. We can lock him in for 4 years right there. So those are those pieces where we collectively are not fully aware of, and we won't see the results of them until after the fact. But I think that's the part that people kind of miss. And then the other piece I'll add on to it is with Snead, you and I have talked about this and hinted about this with the knee situation. Like,
yep.
That, I think, that's why I'm just hoping he passes this physical, because that's still contingent on this deal getting done. So hopefully the Titans pass the physical and everything, and then people will assume that it's fine. But trust me, teams have passed guys who probably shouldn't have passed physicals before because they're excited about the player and they want to get it done. So, you know, that's it's to each their own. If a team wants to knock out, wants to say that they failed the physical type of thing, teams can do that, and that helps, and teams can do that. And then teams also pass guys that, it is what it is on that. So is there like you're telling me the Jets passed Tyron Smith, the tackle, that he 100%, 100% aces? That guy's had so many injuries and surgeries and everything that you're like, yeah, all right. So, it just depends on how that goes. But that's my initial thoughts, Matt. How about yourself?
Yeah, I mean, certainly the compensation that the Chiefs got back. You look at all of the corners that have been traded in recent years, and honestly, it's in line with them. And I get, Chiefs fans, I've heard from a lot who have said, hey, wait a minute, we gave up a lot more for Frank Clark. We got a lot back for Tyreek Hill. Well, and as much as I respect the heck out of L'Jarius Sneed, one, Tyreek is just as a future Hall of Famer. I mean, there's no doubt. He's in a category we buy by himself. And once again, wide receivers, edge rushers, bring a lot more back in value than corners do. The NFL teams just, they're willing to pay them. But even then, you look at the cornerback pay, Nick. I mean, guards are getting more money right now. Offensive guards are getting more money than corners. It's just something that every team kind of realizes that they need corners that fit their system. That's more important than anything else. And that trumps being, a shutdown corner. And L'Jarius, I think, is one of those guys. He's really special. But, once again, he's 27. And increasingly, one of the reasons why teams don't like to pay corners is that they're learning that, 28, 29 as a corner, you're probably over the hill. I mean, you'd look out there, Nick. I mean, that there are so many players out there that are still available in the free agent market, and they're all 28, 29, 30. L'Jarius at 27 had his own little issues with, being able to get it. So I think to a degree, Brezovic, I think, got probably about as much as he could with considering that there wasn't a bidding war. It seemed like there was a couple of teams interested, but they fell out of interest because either L'Jarius was asking too much or they, were concerned about the knee. The Titans, as we discussed last week, Nick, both of our eight teams that don't know what they're doing right now. And I feel bad for L'Jarius in that sense, because I think he's going to go to a team that's going to lose a lot of football games. But he's also going to get paid. We'll see about the structure of the contract. At least right now, what we've heard looks very similar to the Jalen Johnson contract with the Bears. Would never have guessed that L'Jarius would get that. I thought he was going to end up having to accept a little bit less than that. So the fact that he's in the ballpark, maybe even in some areas exceeded Johnson's contract, I think it's incredible for him. And the last thing I say, is for, fans who say, okay, well, you could have kept L'Jarius for 1 year on the franchise tag for the 19-8. You could have gone for the three-peat and gotten a third round pick and compensation back next year. Well, one, that's only if the Chiefs don't sign any free agents next year. So there's always a chance, and maybe L'Jarius gets hurt. There's always a distinct chance that you don't get a third round pick back for L'Jarius next year. So this way you do. But two, it's a part of the puzzle piece. And yeah, the Chiefs have some room now so that if they want to get a backup left tackle or even a starting left tackle, if they want to get another receiver, they can do all of that. But now with $27.4 million in cap space, they can also be talking about extensions for some guys like Creed Humphrey, Nick Bolton, Trey Smith. I mean, and the other thing about, and this is the other thing we've talked about too, and I just think that, everybody needs to appreciate is that This was a conscious decision by the Chiefs. The Chiefs have made the decision that they're going to pay Trent McDuffie and they're not going to pay L'Jarius Sneed. And I get that. Trent McDuffie is younger. He's more accoladed at this point. I mean, I think that the expectation is that Trent McDuffie is going to be a better corner for a longer period of time than L'Jarius Sneed. And if that's the case, and that's where you want to put your money, that's the smart thing. And, you know, it's not that long before that fifth year option for Trent that you're going to be paying him. And you just have to make the puzzle pieces fit. And paying your two corners, you know, upwards of $40 million doesn't fit in the puzzle piece. So to me, I mean, a lot of it makes sense, even if it's not fun and even if it's not easy and it's hard saying goodbye to L'Jarius. I don't think that the Chiefs had any other options.
Yeah, and you nailed it on all the points, so I definitely don't have to go over any of those. Tip of the cap to you, sir. What the only other thing is, like, I think just Sneed play the way Chiefs fans liked. He was physical, he was aggressive, he had a lot of Marty defensive era to his game, and he was a talented player. But the level that he played at this year was contract year level. And if he'd played like that all 4 years, I think the league views him differently than what they did for the 1 year that he did this. It doesn't take any away from him being dominant. I'm just saying some of the corners that are going to get named above him did those for, you know, 4, 5, 6 years. And that's why they got the compensation that they potentially did earlier in their careers. And so that's the part, that's a piece of the puzzle for him that kind of hinders what he got in terms of actual trade compensation that teams were forced to. And I just, at the end of the day, I was like, I don't know what else Brett Veach has to do for people to just let his plan play out. Like, he's won 3 Super Bowls. He's helped this franchise win 3 Super Bowls. And people will say, well, that's Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid. It's all of them together. It's not just one person. Like, Brett has to build a roster, and his front office have to build a roster that has the chemistry and has the belief and collectively can come together in those key moments to win those tough games in the playoffs to make that happen. Like, that's where I think sometimes people, including myself, you know, kind of forget that a little bit at times, is they've had to evolve each time they've won a Super Bowl. So with L'Jarius Sneed leaving and everybody trying to run it back and three-peat, they can still potentially three-peat, but the part of their three-peat, the part of their two-peat that's happened, and a part of them winning the 3 Super Bowls they had to evolve and be different each and every year on offense and defense. It wasn't the same way every time. And so now they got to pivot a little bit, and teams are going to have to catch up with what they do versus teams having all offseason to decide, well, L'Jarius Sneed does this. So how do we work around and attack this, this, and this? So that's what I'm saying. Like, it forces it's going to force the Chiefs to have to continue to be creative like they have had to be to get to all these Super Bowls. And I mean, like, they've been to, what, 6 consecutive AFC championships at this point? Like, I don't know what else you need I don't know what else you need to be like, hey, he seems to have this whole roster building thing figured out. Let's maybe give him a chance. It's just the reaction sometimes, it seems like they're playing 500 ball, and people be like, oh, he can be a great GM, but I don't like the return. That's because you don't know, and we don't 100% know what the medicals are that they know behind the scenes, what the projection is of those medicals down the road, and then also just what they've got to get done and what they've already accepted fate-wise in terms of what, like you said, what they've got to pay for this player this year or this player next year, or how do they need this money to go here, here, here. And so when they made the choice to keep Chris Jones, Sneed wasn't going to get paid. And then they were going to have to go down plan B instead of plan A. Because if Chris Jones doesn't get paid, the Chiefs probably do keep Sneed, you know? And they make that work for a couple of years. Then they kind of, move Trent McDuffie's payday down the road and go from there. But, yeah, I don't know. I was hoping it would be a little bit longer before people started, getting frustrated with the plan for the year. But now this allows the flexibility for the Chiefs to re-sign some guys that have been waiting around. And they've already been leaked out that night about some of the players who will probably be, you know, and then there may be another veteran wide receiver that they can go sign now and then go into the draft and feel good about where they're at to take whatever they want.
Yeah, I mean, if you're the Chiefs, you do, like I mentioned earlier, looks like Spotrac and over the cap, once the trade goes through, which it hasn't officially yet, but once it goes through, the Chiefs look like they'd have about $27.4 million, according to both of them, in cap space. And yeah, I mean, with that, yes, you can get a veteran left tackle, Donovan Smith, maybe, sure. You can get an edge rusher, Mike Dana. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't think there'd be anybody who wouldn't like to see Mike Dana back in Kansas City. You can get a veteran receiver added to that room. Honestly, you can get two, because Mecole Hardman's not going to be too pricey. So you could get Mecole and somebody else and add him to that room. And, you know, and to me, I mean, that's not a concern, because that receiver room is one of those things that, to me, you just throw as many resources as you need to at it. But my, you know, my last take, I think, on the trade and everything is, you know, if you go back to the Frank Clark trade and the Sammy Watkins signing, you know, at the time, Sammy Watkins was getting paid like one of the top receivers in the league. And his numbers didn't necessarily justify that. Frank Clark was getting paid, and you gave up a first-round pick for Frank Clark. But you did that because the Brett Veach philosophy of roster building is that, you know, you build your own organization, you build it through the draft, you build it through coaching, and you only go out and make those kind of splashy moves, trades or big free agent signings, when you have a roster hole that you can't fill any other way. And that has trusted, he's done pretty good with that. I mean, in the sense that, I mean, for me, the Frank Clark and the Sammy Watkins deals were always, those are great moves as long as they get a result in a Lombardi trophy. They did, you know, I mean, and his other moves have been resulting in Lombardi trophies too. So at this point, you know, I mean, and the alternative for me for Legarius was not letting Legarius go for only a third round pick. The other option was just letting Legarius go for nothing, which could have been the possibility. So the fact that he managed to get something, managed to get Chris Jones done too, I feel like that's a, and now has some money to still go out and do some things. You got to feel pretty good about where you are as the Chiefs. So, and I'm with you. I mean, I don't think they're going to use that. I don't think the Chiefs will draft a player with that third round pick in 25 from the Titans. I imagine that they will not have that for more than about a month. That will be going somewhere. And I just, my last point is, can just portray this team building prospect with what the Titans are doing. I don't know what the Titans are doing. The Titans are just going out and playing fantasy football right now. They have a bunch of money and they're like, let's just go sign some guys. And that never works. You know what? The Rams, you know, went on a cutting spree of spending, you know, cuts massively once they signed that Aaron Donald deal, because they just couldn't really afford anybody else. And what do? They go out and they draft guys. So now they got guys like Puka Nacua. And now, you know, they can start spend some money to just surround these young guys that they've drafted the last couple of years to try and rebuild the team. I mean, that's how you build teams. I don't know what the Titans are doing. Rand Carthen, I mean, I can, Nick, I once again, I just go back. I can't even imagine what the face, look on the face of Mike Vrabel would be if Rand Carthen had walked into his office and said, hey, I spent $90 million on Calvin Ridley, and you won't believe what quarterback I got you. I think Mike Vrabel might have just chopped him in half. So, like I said earlier, I feel bad for Legarius because I don't think he's going to win a lot of football games, but I'm happy that he's going to make a lot of money. And I think this is probably about as best of a win-win as you can get for both sides.
Yeah. I feel like Snead won and got the lifetime value he needed financially that he was looking for. He's won a couple of rings with the Chiefs. He got to learn from Dave Merritt, so he got to have the memories. And so, I mean, for him, it's great for him and what he did and just how good he was to everybody in the locker room. And then the Chiefs were able to get some compensation that they can use to move up or get a player.
And, I mean, I'll say, I will miss Legarius because he was always a good guy in the locker room. He was quiet, but you know, I always felt like he was as truthful and as honest as he could be, and as comfortably as he could be. And like I said, he wasn't the loudest guy, and he wasn't, you know, he wouldn't go out of his way. He was the least diva corner that I think you're ever going to find. And the Chiefs have a few of those guys. I mean, Trent McDuffie is not a diva. It's incredible that, because usually the best corners are, honestly, Nick, biggest a-holes. The Chiefs have a bunch right now that are not, and I love it. So we'll see what happens from here.
And now we transition, Matt, to our next part.
That's right, because we know what everybody wants to hear about. You want to know about the wide receivers that are in the draft. And Nick has been churning through the film. Mm. And I can't wait, Nick. What's on the platter?
All right. So I'll start with the first round guys, the top guys I think are going to go in the first round. Then there's some fringe guys that I think are going to go first to second round. Obviously, Marvin Harrison Jr. is the guy that everybody talks about. But the guy that I thought was actually it's going to be on top of my board. It's going to be Malik Nabers from LSU. Malik reminds me so much of Ja'Marr Chase and the athletic ability, the explosiveness, just how dynamic he is and what a playmaker he is and just how smooth he is in and out of his routes, how dangerous he is, how much of a home run hitter that he can be as a receiver. So for me, with what he is athletically and size-wise, Malik Nabers is going to end up being top. With Marvin Harrison Jr., he looks like his dad playing football. And that's not meant to be mean. It's just he's so technically sound. You can tell he learned so much from his dad, whether watching him or just learning from him, you know, working with him, that like you literally see the original Marvin Harrison out there playing football. So you're not going to go wrong with either one. It's just I think Nabers has just some athletic ability that like is going to put him over the top. Then you get to Rome Odunze from Washington. I was pleasantly surprised for a guy that has his size, how much of a tough matchup he can be for cornerbacks. I liked his quick release, how quickly he got to 10 yards. The quick acceleration that he has, he does a good job adjusting to the football and he catches it cleanly. Like we've talked about before, that's something that I really, really like with receivers. He made over-the-shoulder catches look more routine than he should with how tough they can be. His open field vision was where I felt like kind of knocked him down a little bit, to where he didn't have that same playmaking ability that Marvin Harrison Jr. or Malik Nabers have at that time. And it just that's where I can see all three of those guys going top 10. So I don't think the Chiefs are going to get that option at them. But if the Chiefs do get an option at any of them, I'm not going to say no to them taking advantage of it. Then that goes to the next wave, which is still first round. Brian Thomas from LSU, who also works with Malik Nabers. Like I'll say this about a lot of the wide receivers I watched. In the games I watched, most of them got free releases. Like they, you know, there isn't that much press coverage corner, and I'm watching a lot of different defenses and everything, and I'm like, man, these guys really don't press that much. They just they get on the line, but then they force the receiver to go either inside or outside, or they play off, or you know, they're just playing zone coverage. But like I was just surprised at how many free releases college offenses get when I looked at the grand scheme of it, watching the tape this year. So you don't get a true game in, game out aspect of how well they can beat press coverage on a regular basis, or when they play this team or that team, how good they are at it. So that's something that I think is a little bit more guessing than, you know, or you've got to watch every single game of that player's career. And that's time I just don't have with a normal day job. But with Thomas, you know, he's very confident in his double moves. And like, that's something you normally don't see with a lot of receivers, is just how confident they can be with it. He sells them well and he knows how to hide the tells. So like a corner's looking to see that tell. When does he flash his hands? When does he turn his head? Does his eyes get bigger whenever the ball is coming closer? And when I'm watching how the corners react to him, they had no idea the ball was coming a lot of the times because of how late he'd get his hands up or how he'd go about it. So I think that's what made him unique. And that's what was something that I'd marked down. And he was very physical and run support as a blocker. So I was happy with that part of it. And he's able to stay a couple steps ahead of a defender. And when you're looking at a guy in the college level, you don't want to see a ton of contested catches if you're taking a guy in the early rounds. Because once they get to the NFL level, whether they do or don't know the nuances of the game, that's going to be closer. So you at least want to know they have the speed to where if they teach them the little nuances, they can still keep that contested, you know, keep that two steps if they can type of thing, if that makes sense. Hopefully it does. If it doesn't, my bad. But Brian Thomas's double moves is really what burned a lot of corners in the college game. Keon Coleman, he's got great size, but I just don't see a guy that really is going to fit the Chiefs scheme overall. I mean, I understand for his size, he had some athletic ability, some cool leaps, some cool things of that nature, but there's just, when I see a wide receiver that's a bigger body style, they've got to be really explosive. They got to be really athletic, good lateral quickness and stuff like that to work in the Chiefs scheme with the timing routes the Chiefs have and how they go about everything. Otherwise, it turns into Kelvin Benjamin working in the Chiefs scheme. It never worked out, you know? And so with Keon Coleman, I see those stiff hips. I see that slowness coming off the line. And that may work in other schemes, but like for the Chiefs scheme with timing base and how they need them to be precise on their routes, how they need them to explode in their routes and all that type of stuff, I just didn't see something that I think is going to work for them. But he is an awesome blocker in the run support. So, I mean, like, there's all those little key points that whenever you put them all together, you're like, hey, this worked for the scheme. This doesn't. Doesn't mean he can't be a good receiver in the NFL. Doesn't mean he can't be a part of it. Just means that for that, that's what that's going to be. Next up that I think is going to – this is where it gets interesting. Because I think all four of those guys are going to go. Keon Coleman, I'm not sure if he's going to – if a team's going to fall in love with him late in the first round or wait till the second – or if he even goes a little bit lower because of what they have testing-wise. But then the next guy that everybody's going to be talking about is Donis Mitchell from Texas. I believe he's 6'3", 6'4". He looks like T. Higgins on the field size-wise. He has the athletic ability that you're surprised by for his frame. I don't know Chiefs-wise if it is going to definitively work. He's just a little tick off athletically from what I think that they prefer. But it wouldn't surprise me if, like, hey, they were like, well, we didn't take the chance on T. Higgins and we have another swipe at this, so this is our possibility to do it. He's not as explosive speed and acceleration-wise as the previous guys I mentioned and some guys behind him that are probably going to get drafted. And it doesn't overwhelm you, but he's still learning how to sell routes. He's still learning double moves and how to make those things work. And he's still adjusting to tracking the deep ball and maintaining that speed. So like there's still parts of his game that kind of put him on the fringe to where I'm wondering, I could see him being a Buffalo Bill and being opposite of Diggs if they're going to keep Diggs. But like, I'm not 100% sure what he will or won't be. Matt, you got any thoughts? I can get a quick water here real quick.
Well, there's two things that I'm going to have ask you to talk me down off a ledge from, and why, you know, the guys that I'm going to be watching first,
yeah,
and look at and everything are Brian Thomas and both the Texas receivers,
yeah.
Because, and you know, I know you haven't got to Xavier Worthy yet, but we know we will. We'll be getting to him. Because I always have a fear of getting the second best receiver from a college offense, because sometimes that player ends up getting a lot of favorable matchups and making plays that they probably don't make otherwise because they had somebody else getting all the attention. So is there anything that I should be concerned about with those guys as far as, you know, that they've proven themselves that they are the equal and that there's not any of this, hey, you know, they got some good matchups because they had somebody else taking the heat for them?
Adonis benefited from Xavier, like more so than Xavier benefited from Adonis, if that makes sense. And the reason I say that is I'll get into Xavier. Xavier's the most athletic wide receiver in this class. Like,
yeah,
he jumps off the tape whenever you watch him, just how quickly he eats up 10 yards, how quickly he explodes in and out of his breaks, whether it's a slant, crosser, doesn't matter. Like, he's leaving guys in the dust. And, like, in terms of wide receivers I've watched coming out over the years, Tyreek Hill is still the standard of what a guy can be, explosiveness coming out. Then Marquise Brown was pretty good. Jamar Chase was awesome to watch overall athletically. And then now watching Worthy, just and Worthy's not the only guy. There's three guys behind him that really have explosiveness too. It's just he sets himself up at a whole different level because of what he is, just how noticeable it is, no matter how much experience you have watching tape, no matter how, you know, it just, once you watch a handful of receivers, then you see that and you're like, whoa, all right, well, the Ferrari came into play now. I think with the two receivers there, I think Xavier is going to have to go to the right scheme that can utilize his speed correctly and be a part of a bigger picture to where he's not the main guy initially, but like teams are going to be scared of his speed because Alabama tape I watched and some of the other guys, like they were fearful of his speed, and he was getting doubled on some plays to where not just within each other, there was a safety they maintained over top of him and the corner right there. And then sometimes the linebacker was keeping tabs too. They did not want to get beat by Xavier. And in turn, that obviously gave Adonis a little bit more. And then Jalen Sanders, the tight end, got room to kind of work over the middle. So I hope that answers your question.
It does. And then I do have a second question about Xavier,
yes,
Worthy, because we've kind of talked about this before too, is that he is thin. I mean, 6'1", like 172 was his weight, and that's obviously taller than a Tyreek Hill, but weight-wise, not that far different. But Tyreek, you know, even for being a little guy, Tyreek was thick. And that was what always gave you the comfort that he was going to be able to take a punishment and get back up. And he always did. Does Worthy have that?
That is the question every team's going to have to project on their own. And I know that sounds weird to say, but like you're going to have to, that's where each team's going to have to consult with their strength trainer. And maybe if they get them in, you know, from a top 30 visit type thing, where they can kind of gauge that a little bit more about how much they estimate they can put on them muscle wise, because there is, you know, NFL teams do have formulas where they can guess how much the player can put on weight wise, good weight, not just weight in general, but like how much they can put on muscle mass wise that continues to let them have the ability that they do, but not take away, you know, allow them to be safe in the NFL, be able to maintain in the NFL, get injured less, but also be able to succeed with the skills that they already have and maybe build off of it. So that's somewhere like each strength training coach, they're going to have to chat with and kind of see, hey, what do you think you can do with this guy to help him and not lose that speed? Because I'm telling you, Matt, like I just took a gander at my notes and I said, that guy gets to 20 yards in the blink of an eye. Like it blinks and you're like, oh, he's at 20. Holy heck. There. So I'm just telling you, like, whether that does or doesn't happen, that level of speed is going to – teams are – it overrides so much that I think teams are still going to go chase – because you're always chasing that type of speed.
Yeah.
So, like, I think teams are going to be like, you know, it may not, but I can't pass up that speed. That's not – it's like an eclipse coming. It's here now. Let's get it.
Now, unless my cold diminished my hearing and everything, I think there's one receiver that a lot of Chiefs fans I know are just absolutely falling in love with, and it gets mentioned a lot about going to the Chiefs that I don't think you mentioned yet, and that's Ladd McConkey.
That is
is there a reason, Nick?
No. It's just Now that we got Worthy done for the most part, I will go to Ladd. again, he's just right behind Xavier. And the fact that he, I'll just read off the notes for you here. He covers 10 yards so quickly. McConkey is so explosive out of his release. His start and stop is what separates him from a lot of wide receivers. It makes him, it makes his doubles and comebacks very effective. McConkey's quick at changing direction and can take a routine 5-yard catch into a 20-yard gain. And he's willing to block, but more of a get in the way versus put the corner in the ground. So you have certain receivers that are like, hey, I'm going to wall him off. All right, the guy got by. We're good. And there's other guys that like Keon Coleman that want to embarrass him and put him in the dirt and just intimidate the heck out of him. But Keon Coleman had the size to do that. So, you know, lad, like if you're not – if you don't get, and I'm looking at this from a Chiefs perspective, and I have another wide receiver that I'll talk about in a minute. If you don't get Xavier Worthy, but you want that level of explosiveness in that ballpark, then that's where Ladd McConkey comes into play as a potential slot receiver. It's just Xavier, teams already know what he can and can't do because of how much the Texans motioned him around. They put him all over the offense. They motioned him like crazy. So you know that he can be just as effective at all different spots. So there's that piece of that puzzle. But yeah, with Ladd, it was a run watching these guys in a row because I watched Xavier. And I'm like, all right, let's see what Ladd does. I'm like, okay, he's still in the ballpark. And then the next guy I went to that was in that ballpark, I'm scrolling down here a little bit because he's further down the list, was Ricky Parcell from Florida, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Either Parcell or Parcell. Either way, him and Ladd are probably going to be slot receivers, but they give you that threat of speed that you need in the slot. And with Ricky, dude, he had good get off the line of scrimmage, acceleration. He worked well over the middle, and he was able to use his quickness to find the voids really, really quickly in coverage to where, like, you don't have to wait around. Boom, it's there, go, done, catch, get upfield. And Florida motioned him a lot too, which I was glad to see. They used him on reverses and smoke screens. He was able to get vertical quickly and get a couple steps on defenders. And he had one of the most impressive one-handed catches I've ever seen. If you just search his name, Charlotte, you will understand. Like, he put his right arm up, all the way up, while he's leaning forward and fully stretched out his right hand, somehow caught it, and then pulled it in between, I think, two. There was two at the time, but there was a third coming over top, and it was in between three defenders, and I think he ended up taking a hit there at the end. But it was an insane Odell Beckham-level type catch that he had, and he gives his best effort to get in the way blocking-wise. There's some guys that are just strong and just enjoy it. And there's guys that are willing to do it. He's kind of that in-between to where he's willing to do it, but he gives you what he's got, and you can respect it. Let's see. There's a whole bunch more. So we got the lad, and I got through him. Okay, next up in the puzzle, I'll go to a guy that's been pretty popular and mocked to the Chiefs, Troy Franklin
mm-hmm.
from Oregon.
It's another one.
He's got a good combination of size and speed. He's really smooth on slants and posts, which I enjoyed watching about him. He's able to get a couple steps on defenders with the verticals. He lacks the lower body strength right now to break tackles. So if he can get that up, I think he can break some more tackles and kind of be a little bit more yards after catch when things get tough and guys get pursuit angles. He's got to work on not letting defenders push him to the boundary. Far too often, he doesn't climb back on top of the route quick enough. He lets a defender kind of just use their body to kind of push him and drift him out of bounds. So that's going to be one of the first things he's going to have to work on in the NFL so that he can get back on top of the route and use his athletic ability to really kind of burn the corner for even trying that type of stuff. And that may be a dip of the shoulder when he's releasing. You know, it could be just various quick feet inside to get the corner to bite a little bit so you can move outside of them. It just depends on what you want to do plan wise. Franklin, again, willing to block. And this is where it starts to separate some of the receivers. He's very good at getting open on fire drills. So with Patrick Mahomes, that's that next step that whenever you have those guys marked down, what, how well do they do in fire drills? He was one of the first guys I wrote down, very good in the fire drill. And part of that is that a quarterback's willing to do that. So you can't knock other receivers I talked about because they have the offensive scheme. They have the talent to where maybe there isn't a fire drill just because they have so many explosive guys on the team, or the scheme's really good, or the quarterback throwing to him is at that certain level. But he was one of the first ones that it became noticeable that he could play out a structure. But he was put in that situation to do that versus some of those other guys that may have never had that situation in the games that I watched. Matt, any thoughts while you get another water?
It feels to me that, okay, there's three receivers at the top that, unless something really goes wrong, that the Chiefs probably don't have a chance at. They're going to be gone before the Chiefs could, even if they wanted to move up. Then maybe, do you think there's going to be seven or eight receivers go in the first round?
Right now, I think those first three are going in the top 10, top 12. Just depends on what teams do at quarterback, offensive tackle. But I think those receivers are going in the top 12 without a problem. Then I have concerns Brian Thomas is going to go somewhere between that 16 to 22 range, and where he goes there is going to start another run of wide receivers to where Adonis could go, Ladd McConkey could go, and Xavier Worthy has a really good chance of going because of that speed he had on his 40 time at the combine that I think really catapulted him. So those are kind of the ones that I'm like, those are the guys that are in play to where if they don't go in the 20 to 32 range, they're definitely going top of second. And so that's kind of where that is. The Ricky guy I named off, Ricky's probably going in the, I expect him to go in the second round personally. And then Franklin, I just think the teams are going to go with those athletic guys a little bit more that have a little bit, just a, you know, and it may just be just a hint, but just a little bit more explosiveness and testing numbers that are going to push them above Franklin, in my opinion.
Is there anybody further down? I mean, there's a lot of receivers you know, jammed into the top 100 picks. I mean, we could see receivers just going consistently. Is there anybody further down the list that, you know, would be available maybe in the second or third round that really jumps out to you?
This guy is sneaky, sneaky good. Next guy I'm going to talk about, Roman Wilson from Michigan. He's going to be a slot receiver, but if he's in the right scheme, he's going to be a really good slot receiver for a long time. Michigan, what they did is they took advantage of his quickness and they motioned him all over the scheme to give him that edge on a lot of plays to where corners never had a prayer just because of how good his lateral quickness was. The burst he had getting upfield, his fearlessness over the middle and making catches and just blocking over the middle if he had to, how much he would fight for contested catches. And like I said, he didn't really have to fight through press coverage because of how much they motioned him and the formations. They put him in. They were trying to get him open at all times. But, I mean, he aligned in the ways they gave him clean releases. So, like, we'll see what happens here. But, I mean, like, that he would be a fun, fun player to watch in the slot position. And then I already talked about Ricky. I'm going to go a little bit further down here. And this is more, do you want to get to day three, or do you still want to kind of stick in day two?
Oh, well, let's get day three. Come on. I mean, I love day three, guys.
Okay. So day three wise, Jacob Cowan from Arizona. He's again, once you get past those guys, first round and some second and third round guys, you're going to be getting more slot type of guys that fit the Chiefs that can work with Brown and Rice. Next one's going to be Jacob Cowan from Arizona. I thought he was the perfect slot receiver. He had the short area quickness you want to win quick in the 10 yards, good acceleration. He could start and stop on a dime. And his double moves were tough for any corner to defend. He overwhelmed them with speed and quickness. He worked well over the middle. Fearless when it comes to going across the middle, which is you don't see that with a lot of receivers. So when you do, you mark that down. And then I thought he had really good body control, and he had some strong legs that could break tackles that I wasn't expecting. This is another one of my home run hitters. We'll see what the league thinks of him. Jaquan Jackson from Tulane. Like, he could immediately be a punt or kick returner without a problem. He's a very explosive receiver. He had a big play against USC when Tulane played USC and upset them in that bowl game that put him on my radar when I saw him take that 75-yard touchdown. He's got good short, again, good short area quickness. He is vicious on slants, out routes, and drag routes. Andy Reid would have a ton of fun with his level of speed in the system. He had good balance and body control, which not all receivers have, to where they can take a hit but still maintain the way that they are, or have body control to contort the way that they need to, but be able to keep their feet in bounds even though they're making an acrobatic catch, and he had that. His route running is going to just have to continue to work on and kind of focus on, but he's willing to be a blocker. It's just not a passion. And he's just gotta work on selling some things a little bit better with the speed that he has. But once he does, there's a ton of promise there. Another guy, I'm gonna go two other guys, and these are day three guys, more likely, probably third round day three guys. Jamari Thrash from Louisville. He has sneaky good speed and acceleration, dangerous on slants and crossers. He can sell the double move. He understands spacing and adjusting according on the coverage, which is kind of rare for day three guys to adjust when they're doing crossing route, timing route type stuff. He did. And a corner linebacker moved here, and he went a little bit wider and understood it and avoided PI and that type of stuff. He's got a knack for the fire drill, since he had to deal with it a lot at Louisville. I didn't get to kind of gauge how he was press coverage with what I got to see. I would like to see him catch a ball a little bit cleaner, but he could be a slot receiver for the Chiefs down the road without a problem. Malik Washington from Virginia, another guy that I'm a huge fan of. Washington, flat out, he's a weapon. He has such a competitive nature for his size. The football belongs to him and nobody else, and you're not taking it from him. Even if the ball is a little bit away from where it was thrown, he's going to go get it, and you're not taking it from him. He was quick off the line, again, could cut on a dime, and he had good balance for his size that allowed him to break off some tackles. And at times, he looked like a running back out there. And for a running back, he just has that low center of gravity where guys would bounce off of him. There was a player I was thinking of, but he had a poor background, and I don't want to use his name. Off-the-field issues. And so with Washington, he's going to get knocked for his size, but his playmaking ability, the vision in the open field, and the drive that he has, I think it's going to keep him on a lot more rosters than people realize or expect. Then I'm going to go to a guy that I know is local for a part, Anthony Gould from Oregon State. He may not have the ideal size and weight, but the acceleration and lateral quickness is really what separates him. He's going to be another good slot receiver, and he's going to be a great punt returner. So, like, that's why he's probably going to go day three, but he's going to have an immediate impact on special teams. He had the big return in the East-West Shrine game where he ran up the middle, did a spin move, and then took it for, like, 70-yard touchdown. He just needs the opportunity to get up to speed. So that's where somebody like Andy Reid can scheme that open while he's learning some of the finer points, and then he can take it the distance. Like, if the blocking's good on a wide receiver screen, he could take it the distance with the speed and vision that he has and his reaction and tight areas of how to create opportunity and create space for him. And just that quick twitch off the line ability, it's just tough for corners and kind of overwhelms them.
There's, you know, one of the things that's still hanging in here with, and the receiver position is a big part of this. I mean, it's in other positions too, but we're still in the COVID era of college football, where you've got some, you know, hey, guys who are coming out as juniors, maybe not as much, but certainly some of the seniors might be older than they have been in the past. And that for me can always be a little bit of a concern. One guy that jumps out at me, and I'm just curious what you think about him, Nick, because everybody's talked about these Washington receivers, but Jalen Polk, he's like the only sophomore that's in this group. And so he's a little bit younger than everybody else. What's your kind of take on him?
Here's the thing. I like all Washington receivers.
They're well coached.
So yes, and that's you're not getting a bad player from Washington. I'll get to Polk, then I'll go to McMillan. With Polk, he had some of the best catch concentration I've seen from a receiver. And I'm saying things could be chaotic around him. He did not care. Like he's going to make that catch, and it wasn't going to distract him from making that catch. And that was noticeable more so than I expected. Like he could be in traffic. Didn't matter. There's the ball. That's the ball. I catch the ball. Then I go make magic. So like, you know, that's just how he was mentality wise. I was really impressed with how his extension outstretching for the football. I wasn't expecting that with his size, and he went and did it and on some impressive catches. He understands how to use his body to create the separation in a veteran savvy way. So, and for people that don't know, either some guys, you either use your body just like you're in basketball and you get the full extension. There's some guys that, hey, I'm going to lean this left shoulder into him and then cut off of it. And, oh, hey, look, I got two steps. Like, you know, the Keenan Allens of the world know how to do this to perfection. And now you get called for offensive pass interference. Polk's already got it pretty much down. And, like, you don't necessarily need it, you know, but it's when you got it in your tool belt, you take full advantage of it. And then let's see. Next thing on him, he was very precise on his double moves. So that helped him gain a couple steps on corners at times. I thought he had good speed and acceleration, just not the top end up there. But you're getting a wide receiver from a technique perspective. You're not having to tweak a bunch of things on it or have to overly coach a ton with him just because of how well they're coached up there. And then I'll get to Jalen McMillan. I actually liked him more because he reminded me of Keenan Allen as a route runner. I thought his double moves, his double moves were so good, the way he created separation with them. I thought he did a really good job of reading coverage and splitting the difference with his routes. Thought he kind of understood the coverages and where to go and where to attack at times better than some receivers do at that phase. Tracked the ball really well and adjust to it, which all Washington wide receivers do. It's just something that they all seem to have a natural ability with, and that's a tribute to their coach, their previous coach that they had, and then their current coach as well. McMillan's capable of making a couple defenders miss in the open field, more so than Polk was. I thought he had good burst off the line, and he, again, I got it written down here too, knew how to use his body to create separation. Not a surprise whenever I mentioned that with the other Washington receivers. And he was actually – McMillan was actually a more physical blocker and run support. So he gave a lot more to it than probably Rome did and probably Polk did. But I think they're all good wide receivers. Like, I don't think you're going wrong with any of those guys. And I fully expect those guys to be gone by – all three Washington receivers I expect to be gone by, like, 75 or 80 tops.
And here is the crazy thing. I mean, just taking a look at those two guys in particular – in regards to COVID, they both played in college for 4 years. Polk is 21, McMillan is 22.
Yeah.
So, hey, they still had plenty of college experience, maybe not as much game experience because of COVID, and their classifications gets a little out of line. Mm-hmm. But you kind of have that. I mean, across the board with players, there's still a little bit. And I'm always going to get nervous about, even though it works out, like a L'Jarius Sneed drafting, you know, a kid who's 23. You know, sometimes you're still better off betting on the youth, but your mileage may vary, Nick.
Yes, it will. So, Matt, what else would you like to know? And then we'll wrap this thing up here.
Well, we've hit a lot of the draft receivers. Now the Chiefs have a little bit of money to play with. Is there any free agent receiver that's out there in the market right now that you'd be interested in the Chiefs kicking the tires on?
Yeah, I'm curious to see what Hunter Renfro's market's going to be out there. And I
think that's the one for me, too.
Because I felt like he wouldn't wait this long unless he's waiting on a specific opportunity to make the decision. So I kind of wonder if he's been waiting on Chiefs. Jalen Guyton from the Chargers is another guy I'm kind of intrigued what may or may not happen with him. Because that's another individual that the Chiefs know well. I know he's coming off injury, so that may be a part of that puzzle. But yeah, I mean, those are the first two guys that I'm kind of thinking of, and I'm like, hey, I wonder what that money the Chiefs have now. Because like the thing is, I'm gonna watch this week is Mike Dana. I personally think Mike Dana's just been waiting for, he tested the market, everything, you know, see what the number was out there. Then he knows what he gets with the Chiefs. He's probably gonna get a little bit of a pay increase, but I think he's kind of been waiting on the Chiefs to resolve their cap situation so he can potentially maybe come back. I think Donovan Smith is something that I think that's their first priority because they know what he can and can't do. They know where he's at physically, and they know what they're getting with him. And I think they're okay with that part of that while they still work through whatever they're going to. Because even if the Chiefs draft a tackle in the first couple rounds, Wanya Morris is actually a better right tackle long-term. So like that, and then that just puts him at right tackle and allows him to kind of work behind Juwan if the Chiefs do get a tackle in the top three rounds. And then Donovan and that tackle can work together. But they also know they can move Wanya back over if they need to. So Wanya gives them a lot of flexibility, and having Donovan, they just know what they're getting from him. He can teach the younger guys, and it's kind of the best of both worlds in that aspect of it.
Yeah, I'm with you on Renfro, and I think you're right. I mean, Guyton's is kind of a sneaky good one too, because once again, I think he's 26, so you're talking about a guy who's still got a lot of upside.
Mm-hmm.
That's what, if I'm the Chiefs, I'm looking for. I'm not sure if I'm the Chiefs, I'm looking at any of these guys who are 31, 30, that kind of thing. I mean, even Josh Reynolds at 29 is kind of at the high end of a range for me, but McColl, remember, still 26. So, and I still think there's a reasonable chance that he's back in Kansas City. So,
yeah, no, I'm not going to doubt him potentially being back here. But yeah, no, I'm pulling up the wide receiver list right now just because I'm intrigued to see who's left.
Yeah, Tyler Boyd's still left.
Well, they updated their sheet to where they don't have it by position right now, and I don't like that. It's alphabetically. I don't want alphabetically. I want position. So, Matt, I'll ask you this while I'm stalling. What do you want to see from the receivers that the Chiefs draft? What do you think they're going to need to be successful, no matter who the player is?
I mean, I think there's two things. I mean, one, I think, is you're absolutely looking for someone who has some proven success of getting separation. That's something that obviously the Chiefs had a lot of hard times with last year. And I think you're looking for somebody who's got a history of beating zone, because the teams are not going to stop playing zones against Chiefs. I mean, they're just going to continue to see more and more of it. They're not going to see much man coverage. So those are two skills to me that any receiver, I think, that the Chiefs draft have to have. It's got to be two of their best tools. But I mean, I think they can go both ways. I mean, as far as, you know, because the addition of Hollywood to me, you know, gives them that speed guy. It gives them somebody who can be a deep threat and be the outside guy. And, you know, and they don't necessarily have to go with any one flavor. I mean, they don't need a speed receiver. They don't necessarily need a possession receiver. I mean, they've got a lot of things. So I think Rashee Rice gives them a lot of flexibility too. But I think they can just really, truly, with the receiver, go with the best available player at that position. I'm just going to be interested to see how the draft board falls, because, you know, if the Chiefs aren't able to make a trade and all of a sudden there's eight receivers gone by 32, I don't know if I'm going to see the value of going receiver at that spot, because it probably means there's a really good player at another position that's sitting out there. But you never know how the draft's going to unfold, Nick.
Matt, you're 100% right, sir. And while you were doing that, I looked through the list. Yeah, no, those are the guys. The ones those are the most appealing of the bunch.
I could probably listen to DJ Chark, but I wouldn't be really super excited about it.
And I'll let everybody know that there are some other wide receivers that I'll end up having on the board down the road here that we didn't necessarily talk about today. But Matt and I are running on an hour now, and I can't just go through every single thing. So we'll
we've got some time between now and the draft, Nick. So
right, we do. Well, but this gave you a bigger overview on kind of who my favorites are that kind of stood out and the who, what, and why.
And there you go. And, well, we will continue with the draft prep next week when we come back here on 41 is the Mic next Sunday.
Offensive tackles next week, Matt.
There we go. I like it.
I'm going with the popular ones that people need answers for.
All because you just want to spend at least 5 minutes talking about Joe Alt.
I will try to limit that. But I saw somebody had him as like the 14th best player in their rankings, and I was like, that's a lie. Whoever put that down, that is ridiculous. But if he gets to that point, but if he goes lower than that, that's fine. I'm fine with that. If he wants to get in that 20 range, that's completely fine with me.
I mean, yeah, can we Photoshop some images of Joe Alt, you know, that might cause draft stock to drop, Nick? I mean, you know.
I wouldn't do that to Joe Alt. I can't do it to him. Never met him, never talked to him, but I just can't do that.
No, I'm not encouraging anyone to do that, by the way. No, do not. If you do that, you will be on the naughty list, so do not do that. But
yeah, I think he's going 6 or 7 to either the Giants or Titans. I've just accepted that the Titans are going to get him. The Titans are going to get a whole bunch of players that I like, and they're just going to have them all in a team together.
And they're going to find a way to go 5-12 with all of them.
Yeah. I got nothing positive to say about that, Matt. It's about time to wrap this one up.
That's right. So next Sunday, tackles right here on 41 is the Mic. We're going to have a live stream Q&A on Tuesday. So if you got any questions you want to bring up, bring them up then. We'll always get everything you've got. Hopefully Nick can stop by on Tuesday. I haven't actually asked him yet.
You already know the answer to that one. I'll be there.
So you got that to look forward to. Appreciate everybody, and we will see you next week.
You've been listening to 41 is the Mic, presented by KSHB 41, your home of the Chiefs and Chiefs Digest.